Coming up, recapping this weekend's NBA playoff games and previewing every second round series with Yahoo Sports' Dan Titus. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show, NBA playoff time. What a great weekend. We had a game one and a game seven on Sunday. That's why we get a special show tonight with Yahoo Sports fantasy basketball expert, NBA expert, Dan Titus. What's up, Dan?
What's up, KOC? What a great night of basketball, man.
Ooh, really good night. We had two dramatically different types of games. Let's start in the Western Conference with the game seven we saw between the Warriors and the Rockets. Golden State, one game seven, 103-89. The Buddy Hield game, 22 points in the first half, finished with 33. And those 22 in the first half were important, Dan, because Steph only had three in the first half, and they needed those points from Buddy Hield. Houston actually got it down to 3 points in the third quarter after trailing by 12 at half, and Warriors had a great end of the quarter. They put him away in the fourth quarter. Steph finished with 22. Butler had 20. Draymond had 16 points. He pitched in as well. And Dan, you're a Bay Area guy. So, you know, I'm curious for your opinion here. This is another series win of many for Steph, Draymond, Steve Kerr. And to me, this felt like a really unique one against this tough, gritty, defensive-oriented Rockets team. How are you going to remember this one, Dan?
I mean, I'm going to remember it as Draymond Green just stepping up when he needed to. From the outset, this man was aggressive offensively. He paced the Warriors in the first quarter with 8 points when you weren't getting much from Steph and Butler. And, you know, I think it's a testament to Steve Kerr finally making the right adjustments. He was getting out-coached for much of this last three games. And to put Pods back into the starting lineup and then let Buddy Hield just flourish. He was the zone buster tonight. That was the issue for the Warriors for much of these last few games, and they figured it out. And Buddy Hield to come out and hit nine threes, you know, tying a game seven record. I mean, that's just, to not have Steph show up for that long and to have Buddy Hield kind of rise the tide. Just a great showing from the Warriors, and can't say enough about their defense too, man. I know we'll talk about that a little bit.
Oh, I mean, look, dude. Their defense was on a string start to finish in this game. And I think for Houston, especially in the first half, this whole series, I thought Houston felt cool. Like they were chill. Like, yeah, like they're not, there was no fear going against the Golden State Warriors. But I felt there was some nerves in that first half from them. They felt a bit disconnected to me. They were forcing some stuff out there. And that's also in part just how connected Golden State was. Draymond Green had an amazing, I think it was game three or game four earlier in the series when he shut down Çengün. I didn't feel him much defensively in games five or six. I didn't think he was as much of a presence ever since. But in this game, he felt like vintage Draymond again, flying around, offering rim protection, calling out defensive rotations. Draymond was outstanding. And as you said, with Kerr's adjustments as well, the big one tonight was Gary Payton's out. So mixes up the starting lineup again, plays Kuminga, who is the only player for the Warriors who was a minus. He was not good. But playing Kevon Looney in this game, who at times he's looked washed this season and in this series, but against Steven Adams, Adams and Çengün, who have been such a big problem this series, entering game seven, Adams and Çengün had a plus 39 when they were on the floor together. Adams alone was a plus 53 entering game seven. He was a minus nine in game seven. And I felt like Looney was a huge part of that, Dan.
You're absolutely right. And I think that that's the testament to the adjustments that Steve Kerr finally made, going to the trusted players that, you know, have championship pedigree. This was a Looney moment. You know that he's going to perform in these situations. And that's all he needed to do was just neutralize and limit the impact of Steven Adams, who's just been a force over these last several games. And just want to highlight Draymond Green's defense tonight. I mean, he held Çengün to 3 of 11 shooting. Rockets as a whole were 3 of 22 when defended by Draymond Green.
Wow.
That's Defensive Player of the Year stats right there.
Yeah. And also, I think related to defense is, you're going to give up offensive boards. And the Rockets had 14 offensive boards in the game. but they only had 15 second chance points. By comparison, in game six, they had 11 offensive boards, 19 second chance points. In game five, they had 8 offensive boards, 14 second chance points. So they did a good job containing the Rockets when it came to some of those second chance opportunities. And I think that speaks to the toughness from Looney, from Draymond, and so just overall kind of the how the Warriors collapsed inside on those opportunities. And ultimately, I mean, like, if you're not getting and ones, Rockets missed a lot of those. If you're not finishing a ton of those second chance opportunities, and you're also not hitting threes, and the Rockets were 6 of 18 in the game, the Warriors, by comparison, were 18 of 43. The Warriors had as many makes from three. Dude. As the Rockets had attempts.
The Rockets could not solve the math problem tonight. That's what's been the key for them. And you knew that that three-point variance was going to regress at some point. Like, Van Fleet's been unconscious from three over the last few games. And, you know, if you're only going to attempt 15 threes in a game seven, you're not going to win against the Golden State Warriors. But I'd also say for the Warriors, in their three losses, they averaged 15 turnovers. Tonight, they only had 7. So, in my opinion, this was the experience of the Warriors really knowing and understanding the situation. Butler talked about how confident they would have to be. They would have to win those 50-50 balls, those hustle plays, take care of the ball. They did everything, and they executed with perfection. I mean, holding the Rockets to that many points in Game 7, I mean, even for the Rockets side of things, like to hold the Warriors to 103 points, like that was a great battle of defensive tenacity on both sides of
the I mean, the whole special. Series, the entire series, Dan, was just, I had the time of my life watching this series. It was just fun. It felt like a series from our youth.
Yeah.
Watching the NBA.
This is like 2004, 2005 basketball. Here. Like, the Detroit Pistons are back. San Antonio Spurs matchups.
Every Warriors fan in my life has texted me about Steph being held. I got Rockets fans in my life texting me about how they're not getting calls. It's like, dude, like, this is, it's, they're just swallowing their whistles. And I liked it. I had fun watching this series with both teams being able to defend that way. It was awesome. Yeah,
it just makes basketball that much better when you're not having to see these, like, I don't know, the refs just disrupting the flow of the game. Like, we got to let these guys play. And I think this physicality, I'm wondering what this does for Alperen Şengün in the offseason, because the one thing that I will say, he did play very well in this series. He was obviously, you know, the fulcrum of their roster, of their unit, but he's got to shoot better in the paint. I mean, 43% tonight over the course of this series, he's been around 43%. That's just around league average. He's got to be better in the paint too. And the mid-range, I think he was 3 for 15 in this series. As much as he, as talented as he is, I think someone else needs to step up beyond him. And that's going to raise some questions in the offseason for Jalen Green, because he was also a no-show tonight. And I don't know, there's some there's a lot of stars in the market that could be available this offseason. So I think there's going to be some questions about how the Rockets want to proceed here, because they definitely need some offensive shot creation as well as some other clutch bucket getters to get past this first round going forward.
I think along the lines of your point, Dan, is playing against Golden State, specifically Steph, shows just the difference, the gap in conditioning level, because Houston down the stretch of this game in the fourth quarter, like, they kept it close. They had it the three end of the third. I felt like they didn't have that punch back in the fourth quarter. They felt tired to me down the stretch of that game, whereas Steph Curry, who plays 46 minutes in his mid-30s with tons of miles on his body after years of deep playoff runs, he's still running around like crazy, and he's scoring all over the floor. He doesn't look tired at all. To me, I think this series showed the difference between the Rockets with where they are right now as a young team in terms of talent and conditioning, when you compare it against Stephen Curry, who's just endless in energy. And of course, like, Steph is 99th or 100th percentile conditioning when you look at guys in NBA history, and that's really a credit to him and who he is. And it's such a pivotal part of Golden State's success over this last decade plus at this point. But I feel like for Houston, talent, yes, but also if you're Şengün or, you know, Amen Thompson coming up with the calf, the cramp or whatever it was in the second half, Jalen Green, complete no-show offensively, But like then you see Steph over there, you know, like, okay, there's a different level to this.
There's definitely a different level to it. I mean, his second half, for someone at his age, like, you just know he's ready for these moments. I mean, if there's one person that's going to send the Rockets home, it's going to be Steph Curry. This is the fifth time he's eliminated the Houston Rockets from the playoffs. and from him, for him to have...
felt different. Like, this Houston team couldn't be any different from those other Harden, Morey Rockets teams.
Yeah.
Five times? Sure. Damn.
Five times. My yeah. Like, God. He just got their number now. And for him to go off like that in the second half, 17 points, 12 coming in the fourth quarter. There's not much more you can say about Stephen Curry, man. And despite having a quiet first half, to have that, to still be able to have that muscle memory, that crucial shot that you're talking about when Amen Thompson came up with that gimpy calf and he let up a three-pointer, Udoka called a timeout immediately. He's like, I got to get him off the floor because Steph's just going to kill us if he continues to get that matchup. And it's just a heady play by Steph Curry. And then Jimmy Butler also. I think that this is what Draymond foresaw. When we talked about it at the All-Star break, it was like, was Draymond onto something when he was saying that the Warriors can actually win a championship? When you have Jimmy Butler playing this way, locked in on defense at all facets of the game, and you have Steph Curry that can win you a game, and then you get these outlier performances from Pajemski at times and Buddy Hield. This is the path that the Warriors have to win a championship, and it's looking pretty bright considering their success against the Minnesota Timberwolves earlier this year.
Yeah, they did have success against Minnesota earlier in the year. Minnesota feels like a different team at this point with facts. The way they've performed since early March. I don't love Golden State's chances against Minnesota, despite their early season success. Just because Minnesota's a different team. I almost throw those games away earlier in the year with the way Minnesota's playing right now. Do you think that's unfair of me to do that?
Yeah, because I feel like as much as Ant-Man is being labeled as the legend giant slayer, this Warriors team is going to be a lot different too. And, you know, Jimmy Butler, hopefully he'll get a little bit healthy as season progresses, or as the days progress. But, you know, it's not going to be easy playing on Tuesday. but at this point, I think that the Wolves pose a definitely a threat. I mean, because they're going to run the two big lineup. The only difference is they can actually make threes, and they're going to take a lot of them. So that's just a stark difference from Houston, which, you know, honestly was lucky to hit a lot of the threes that they hit for a few of those games to keep this and push it to seven games. So this is going to be a tough matchup for the Warriors, but I think that this is the path. If they're going to win the championship, this is what they have to go through. And I think that they'll be able to. I mean, what's your prediction? I think that the Warriors can at least push six games. Where it goes beyond that, I don't know. But I think that this is going to be an awesome series to watch.
Well, I said Houston at six. I'll go Minnesota at six. Just to continue the trends.
Six. You think this is going to be light work, huh?
Okay. I'll go Minnesota at six. That's what I'll go with right here.
Okay.
Well, what's your series prediction, Dan?
I'm going to go, man, I think the Warriors are just going to continue to battle this out, man. I'm going to go Warriors in seven.
Okay.
Just a rough road that's just going to lay the perfect path for the Oklahoma City Thunder to waltz into the Western Conference Finals and then ultimately a finals bid here.
Well, and for Houston, they enter the offseason here. They found out some things. Şengün, competitor. Amen Thompson, best player on the floor for the Rockets through long stretches of this season, and he definitely was in Game 7, 24 points, 9 of 16, playing good defense, as good as you can hope for against Steph all night. Dude's a baller. He's a gamer, and he doesn't even have a jumper. He's a guy. But the Rockets, like, throughout the series, they felt like a team that was playing without their best player. Like, when you're hoping for Van Vliet or Jalen Green to go off, and then when they don't, you look like this. It's a team without their best player. They need to use their future picks to go get a guy this offseason. Everybody's going to talk about KD and Booker. We'll see who else might become available, but that's priority number one for Houston, and they have the ammo to do it. We had another Game 7 on Saturday, Dan, between the Nuggets and the Clippers. This game I thought would be awesome. it was not awesome from a neutral standpoint. 120 to 101 Denver win over the Clippers on Saturday. Not even a competitive game. I left halfway through the second half to go to my friend's birthday party. It was 30 points, I think, when I walked out the door. When I was there, I saw 33 on the TV or something like that. And yeah, it just wasn't a fun, competitive, close game down the stretch like I was hoping for. And I find it interesting because everybody today, Sunday, has been talking about Harden the choker. And that's fair because last five final games of the seasons for him. Last night on Saturday against the Nuggets, 7 points on 2 of 8. Last year against Denver, 16 points on 5 of 16. 23, Philly versus Boston, 9 points on 3 of 11. 22, Philly against Miami, 11 points on 4 of 9. Way back in 2021, Nets versus Bucks, 22 points on 5 of 17. He's been inefficient. He's been low volume as a scorer. He hasn't showed up in their final games of the season the last 5 years. And that's like those nightmare performances for Harden. They've only strengthened the argument for the people who, understandably so, always said Harden was a choker, whether it was him in college at Arizona State, earlier in his career at OKC, or even at his peak against Houston. I was always somebody who looked the highs of Harden. 35 points, 12 of 23 in a must-win game against the Warriors in 2016. The fact he averaged 35, 7, and 6 against the Warriors in 2019 and had 35 points on 25 shots in that final game 6. Harden had some highs as well in his prime, but he's undeniably been bad the last 5 years in these must-win games. And James Harden deserves criticism. But I feel like the Harden criticism, he's such an easy target. It's shielding criticism from Kawhi Leonard, who on the surface had a solid series. His points in each game, 22 points, 39, 22, 21, 24, 20, 27, 22. Consistently good? Yes. Good as a finisher, but consistently great as a creator? No. And that's exactly what the Clippers needed. In the series, Kawhi was only 11 of 25 out of isolations, only 6 of 14 out of pick and rolls. He wasn't generating offense at all in this series when that's what they needed. Aaron Gordon locked him up. Aaron Gordon, when he defended Kawhi in the series for 248 possessions, Kawhi only had 39 shots. Just to compare that to somebody else, when Kawhi's on Jamal Murray, 65 possessions, he had 32 shots. So Kawhi was being aggressive against others in the series, passive against Aaron Gordon, which is in part a credit to Gordon, but it's also a criticism of Kawhi for not stepping up in 6 of these 7 games. And my fear, Dan, is maybe Kawhi just doesn't have it anymore. Maybe he doesn't have it anymore, and he can't tap into that every single game anymore, which is quite clear with Harden. But it's also becoming clear, I'd say, with Kawhi Leonard. And that's the big fear from a Clippers standpoint following this series, where maybe these guys just can't even get to that level on a consistent basis anymore at all. And if that's the case, it's over. It's over for the Clippers.
That's kind of where I'm at with it. Like, I do feel like James Harden is getting a brunt of this because of his history of collapsing in game 7s. For his career, per Nate Duncan, he's shooting 35% in game 7s. That would be the lowest since the NBA-ABA merger, with a minimum of 100 attempts. So, yeah, he deserves some of the blame. Kawhi Leonard also does. While he shot had a 63% true shooting percentage in the series, averaging 25 points, he just didn't do enough to make a true impact. And I think the Nuggets just played with more effort. The rotations and the depth wasn't working well for Ty Lue. And I had the Clippers winning this series. And I thought it actually still could have went that way if that Aaron Gordon dunk didn't change the whole entire momentum and, state of that series. So looking forward, it's like,
Damn, that was classic bad luck for the Clippers. That moment.
That pretty much ended the series. Oh, let's be honest. So yeah.
Bad luck, bad performances, classic Clippers.
But yeah, that's just Clippers being Clippers. And at this point, if you look at their draft capital, it's not great. If you look at their salaries and the money devoted to injury-prone players that don't have consistency in the playoffs, It's not looking good. Norm Powell only averaged 16 points in this series. He was averaging over 20 in the course of the season. The only like bright spot that you can say consistently throughout this year was probably Ivica Zubac. But at this point, I just don't know where you can rely and trust on the Clippers. Kawhi Leonard being healthy for not even a majority of the season, but like this is the healthiest we've seen him in a while. What's going to happen next year? Is he only going to play 30 games? Can he sustain this? This was the window of opportunity, and I feel like they blew it. And maybe that was because of Aaron Gordon's amazing defense, James Harden kind of collapsing as the series wore on. But I think it just is it's just the Clippers being Clippers, man. I just don't know how they can get out of this. And sucks for Clippers fans, but I think that at least looking forward, it's like, can you trust Kawhi Leonard to be healthy? And I just don't know that we can.
No, you can't. I mean, it sucks, man. It does suck because I saw some stuff on my timeline today about, well, it's time for the Clippers to blow it up. It's like, but you don't have any of your picks until 2030. What are you actually going to get for old man Kawhi Leonard, old man James Harden? Like, the demand for them is not going to be that great. And like, also, like, if Harden were to opt in, or if Kawhi were on the trading block, they could throw a hissy fit and steer their way to certain destinations, ruining your leverage to even hurt the return even more. And again, you don't have your own picks until 2030. The Thunder have your picks in 25, 26, and 27. The Sixers have your picks in 28 and 29. Like, you're just screwed when it comes to that. And
that low key should have been the motivation for the Clippers to win this series. It's like, this is your opportunity to get your lick back against the Thunder, who just own you for the next, you know, 4 or 5 years. Like, legitimately, like, all of your picks are going there from the Shea Gilgeous Alexander trade. Man, that would have been sweet redemption if you at least challenged them. And I thought that they could have. I thought they had the depth and the makeup to do it. But I mean, Joker and the rest of the role players said otherwise. And here we are.
Well, instead, it's going to be Denver who advances. And, you know, Russell Westbrook had some awesome moments in that series for the Nuggets. Yeah, I mean, he had the great quote after the game where, I'm paraphrasing here, he's like, that's who I am. Sometimes it'll be a turnover. Sometimes it'll be a miss. Sometimes it'll be, you know, a steal. Sometimes it'll be a block. But it's always going to be high effort, high intensity. You got to give it a Russ, man. You got to give it to him. I've always been a Russ skeptic. You got to give it to him. He had that was such an awesome moment. Yeah, he's self-aware. And dude, I'll tell you what, man. Yeah, he had the pick the wrong person quote as well. But Ross, that moment in the second half of the game where he had the intentional technical dunk and he hangs on the rim and screams, that was so awesome. That was such a great moment.
The vindication for him is like, that was just the statement dunk. It just sucks for them. Now they got to face the most, the buzzsaw that is the Oklahoma City Thunder. So I love that Russ threw out those turnovers because there's going to be quite a few turnovers going the Nuggets going the Thunder's way in that series, man. I just don't know where they're going to get the playmakers to penetrate that defense. They're going to need Russ in the worst way, but this is going to be a really tough series for the Nuggets.
And only one day off. After that series against the Clippers, and now you got to go into Oklahoma City, who had over a week off and who has been preparing for you. Good luck in this one. But you never know. Maybe too much rest could be a good thing for Denver, and they continue rolling. We'll see about that. But Dan, what's your number one key to this Nuggets versus Thunder series?
They got to win the non-Joker minutes. And, you know, if you go back to the regular season, the Nuggets had a plus 10.5 net rating with Jokic on the floor, minus 9.3 with him off per 100 possessions. In the playoffs, that's even worse. It got down to minus 27 net rating in that first series against the Clippers. And the opponents were shooting 63% from the field, 38% from three. That will not work against the Oklahoma City Thunder. And the two games that the Nuggets played very well against the Thunder this year, they had to score 140 points in one of those. They got exactly what they needed out of the role players. So, you know, Jamal Murray is going to have to continue to be playoff Jamal, but you're also going to have to see Michael Porter Jr. deliver, even though he's going through that shoulder injury. Aaron Gordon is going to be pivotal, and of course, Russell Westbrook. So, and shout out to Christian Brown, who's just been quietly having a really good season. I think he's also going to play a very important role in this series, and and doing his best to try to lock down somebody on the perimeter for that Oklahoma City Thunder team.
What do you make of some of Jokic's recent performances? Because he had 13 points in game 5, 25 in game 6, only 16 in game 7. Of course, they didn't need a lot from him in that game. But it does feel like a little bit of a dip in production recently from Jokic. Do you think that's more just the way the Clippers have defended him with Zubats, you know, Batum, some double teams mixed in there? Or is there anything Oklahoma City can take from this and perhaps replicate what the Clippers were able to do late in the series?
Oh, I'm sure that they're studying Jeff Van Gundy's system right now, because I think it is what you said. I think it's more of Jokic understanding, making the reads of what's the right basketball play, not forcing the issue. And he's always been so cerebral with the game and taking what comes to him. And I think that his dip in production is more so just a catalyst for his role players stepping up and him not having to do as much. I mean, that blowout on Saturday was a testament to just everyone else just stepping up and playing great. So they're going to need that if they're going to win. So I think that's actually a good thing coming into this series, that they have some confidence. Those role players have some confidence that, hey, we can make some shots. And I think what the Thunder are really going to do, you know, get up that point of attack and be aggressive with Joker. There's going to be a lot of open threes in the corner. They got to hit them. So we'll see how this kind of translates in the series.
You alluded to defense getting up on Joker. The number one thing I'm looking for is the defense against SGA here and Denver's overall defense, because you're going to see them mix up their defense throughout the series. You're going to see Christian Brown be the primary defender, but you're going to see them sag off of different shooters. Sometimes it'll be Caruso. Sometimes it might be Dort. They're going to try to see who's the cold shooter and try to sag off that guy to disrupt the offense. But most of all, zone defense has been kind of a theme throughout this postseason. We saw both the Rockets and the Warriors do it on Sunday. We've seen the Bucks do it in their series. We've seen a lot of teams use zone. More zone has been used in this postseason than I think any other series this decade. The Nuggets played more zone this season against OKC than they did against any other opponent. They had 60 possessions of zone this season versus 437 of man defense against OKC. When they were playing man-to-man defense, OKC had a 122 offensive rating. When they were playing zone defense, OKC only had a 93 offensive rating. And it was kind of a janky zone. Like if SGA brought the ball up the floor, they'd trap him at half court with the two guys who'd typically be at the top of a 2-3 zone. And then a lot of the time, like once the ball was out of SGA's hands, sometimes Christian Brown would deny him off ball. Like not like quite box at one level, but really playing ball denial. And a lot, like if SGA wasn't bringing it up, it just looked like more like a traditional 2-3 look. But it's working because OKC's time of possession, that 14 seconds when they're facing Denver man-to-man defense, 16.6 seconds when they're facing the Denver zone. And their shot selection is dramatically different as well. Against man-to-man, 25% of their shots come in the restricted area, 21% in the paint, 16% in the mid-range, 38% from three. Against Denver's zone, restricted area is only 10% of their shots, 17% in the paint, 15% from mid-range, and 58% from three. So the two big numbers there, 10% in the restricted area, 58% from three against the zone, 25% in the restricted area, 38% from three-point range against man-to-man. So they become a three-point shooting heavy team against the Nuggets zone. And I think that's what we're going to see Denver go to a lot in this series, is try to make Oklahoma City into a shooting team and live with the results. OKC did a hell of a lot better against zone defense, against everybody else in the NBA, not named Denver. They had 119 offensive rating against everybody else besides Denver. Like I said earlier, only a 93 defensive rating against Denver's zone defense. But I think Denver's going to bet on that shot profile, turning them into a three-point shooting team instead of a team that lives at the rim. So all this said, Dan, all these numbers are true at you. Zone might be a plan for Denver against Oklahoma City, but like OKC's won 72 games in the regular season and playoffs combined for a reason. So how are you expecting the series to play out regardless of what game plans the Nuggets might throw out there?
I think the Thunder are going to win in five, but I think you make a compelling case for them to make it more than that. And it's really because, you know, SGA strengths are getting downhill and operating the mid-range. So if you're forcing them on the perimeter to make those three-pointers, you know, maybe you can have some shot variance your way. And it's not like the Nuggets are slouches at shooting threes themselves. So if that's going to be the key, they're going to have to push the pace as well. I think the Nuggets have to do their best to dictate the pace of this series. And if they can do that and match their three-point volume, they might have a chance at it. And, you know, they do have the best player on the floor in Nikola Jokic. So you always have a puncher's chance when that happens. But, yeah, it's, the Thunder's defense is so good. I just don't. I don't know how the Nuggets can last this out for more than six games.
So you got the Warriors and Wolves, Warriors and Thunder in the Western Conference Finals. I've got the Wolves and Thunder in the West Finals. Now let's move on to the Eastern Conference here. Game one between the Cavaliers and Pacers was on Sunday. 121-112 Pacers win on the road in game one in Cleveland. And boy, like, what a difference this game was compared to Houston versus Golden State. Like, that was going back 25 years. This one felt like modern, up and down, typical regular season game. It's just like such a dramatic difference from game one to game two tonight. And Halliburton and Nembhard, unbelievable for Indiana. They combined for 45 points on 16 of 25 from the field, 19 assists to only one turnover for those two combined. Zero resistance from the Cavs, Dan. What stood out to you from that Indiana backcourt?
Andrew Nembhard, I mean, we got to have a conversation from what he did last season in the postseason and what he's continuing to do now. This kid is on the rise, and it's not even what he's providing offensively. It's the defense. I mean, the way he just locked up Donovan Mitchell tonight. For 7 minutes, he guarded Mitchell the most, held him to 1 of 8 shooting, 0 for 3 from the three-point line. This guy just continues to just be a solid contributor. And I mean, that really just speaks to all of the Pacers. This is their identity. They played team basketball. They had all their five starters in double figures. I feel like we're just sleeping on them. Like, I picked the Bucks to beat them in the first round. That was a disaster. I thought Damian Lillard would have more of an impact. Obviously, I didn't know he was going to tear his Achilles, but I don't know. I just feel like this Pacers team needs to get to some respect. And this is a hell of a statement. Going into Cleveland, getting the victory. I mean, to force Ty Jerome to shoot 20 shots, that is just it. That's how you play winning basketball right there. It's like, hey, I want – yeah, let's have this guy shoot the ball. And to force Donovan Mitchell into 30 shots, like, that's not the way Cleveland won this year. He can't play hero ball. And I was just shocked at the way Cleveland went away from dominating the paint. They scored over 70 points in the paint tonight, and then they just went away from Evan Mobley and Jared Allen in the crunch time. So they can't just settle like that. And I know that Cleveland has won the 3-point variance for much of the year, and it's been their calling card to be able to shoot that much volume. But like, they got to get back to basics, get downhill, beat up the Pacers a little bit, because right now it looked like the Pacers are just owning the pace, they're owning the defense, and they're playing better team basketball, and that's what's going to help them potentially pull the upset here. I'm not saying they will, but I mean, that was a really good start.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a good point there about Mobley and Allen need to make more of an impact inside. They just looked like role players in game one.
Yeah.
They need to look more like all-stars. And part of that's because Garland wasn't out there. Like, Garland creates so many easy shots out of pick and roll. And I think Garland as well, look, I'd pick a healthy Cleveland in this series if they're healthy. But if there's no Garland, you know, Darius Garland in this series is dealing with a toe injury. I lean towards Indiana, man, because Garland not only makes life easier for Mobley and for Allen, but he also makes life easier on Mitchell, because Mitchell may have had 33 points, but it came on 30 shots, and a lot of it was self-created as well. Eight of his 11 three-pointers were self-created shots. Only three of them came off of the catch. And if you have Darius Garland running a high pick and roll with Jaren Allen, Mitchell flanking on the left wing or right wing or the corner, Garland's going to find him. And Mitchell's a knockdown open shooter off the catch, off the dribble, heavily contested. It's just not as high percentage of a shot. So I think you get a more efficient Mitchell in addition to easier shots for your other guys. So Garland's return is pivotal in the series. And not to mention, You get a better Ty Jerome because there's less of a demand on him if he's able to play with his typical level of usage and minutes coming off the bench for Cleveland. But ultimately, man, like, there's no guarantee Garland's going to be 100% with that toe injury. Jared Greenberg had the report before the game about how he can't really push off of the foot, can't really pivot off of it. And if it were the regular season, he'd probably miss 1 or 2 weeks. He's nearly at a week at this point already, going back to last round when he missed the last two games against the Miami Heat. So, like, there's a chance, even with Garland, you're still getting outplayed by Nembhard and by Halliburton on the other side of this, because, like, Indiana felt like Cleveland in a lot of ways with how many different sources of offense they were getting and how many different ways they were scoring. And I just feel the balance between Halliburton and Nembhard offensively, with both of those guys being able to be creators or off-ball players, just makes them, like, so real, so tough to defend, because in the fourth quarter, Cleveland was switching on-ball screens when Halliburton or Nembhard were being screened by Turner. A lot of the time it was a switch. And there was this instance in the fourth quarter, I remember, where Mitchell got switched onto Turner, and obviously that's a bad matchup for Cleveland. And so DeAndre Hunter, who was defending Nembhard, kind of rotated over, tried to switch that to provide some sides off of Turner. But meanwhile, Halliburton on the other side of the floor, all while that scram switch is happening, he's whipping a cross-court pass to Nembhard, who's got a wide-open three-pointer. And like, they just execute at such a high level. They don't turn it over, ever. And they're so efficient. Like, it's a problem for Cleveland, man, with those guys playing at that level offensively, and their defense, Indiana, is top 10 since the NBA Cup in the middle of December. Like, they are legit, dude. They are legit, and I do feel like they're being overlooked, to your point.
We got to start putting some respect on the Pacers' name at this point. And, yeah, I just think the growth of – they're just a – it's hard to get the contributions. And, like, the one thing that I thought was another telling point of just how locked in this team is like, Benedict Mathurin playing defense. I thought that was an awesome two-way effort for him, and he hasn't really been that great or known as a defensive player, and he's just been so efficient this year. And having him coming off the bench along with the play of Aaron Nesmith, they just have all their role players doing exactly what they need to do. And if the Cleveland Cavaliers don't get Darius Garland back, and he also, you know, I think they would probably try to hunt him a little bit the way that the Miami Heat were when he was, because he's not healthy, but then also because he's not a great defensive player, but Cleveland's going to be in trouble. So I think they have to get back to basics. They have to take care of the ball, limit some of the three-pointers, get better looks, move the ball, and start pounding the paint, because I think that's where they're going to have the most success in neutralizing the Indiana Pacers here.
Yeah, Mathurin had that block on DeAndre Hunter in the fourth quarter, kind of stared him down afterwards. Cool moment. Very cool moment for Indiana. The other series getting started on Monday is the Celtics and the Knicks. Celtics were 4-0. Against the Knicks during the season. Will they be 4-0 against the Knicks in the playoffs, Stan?
No, I think the Knicks are going to make it competitive. I think that the Knicks can actually win this series, man. It's going to take a lot, though. It's going to take a lot. So I think that a lot of this hinges on Jrue Holiday's health. He's got the clean bill of health. He's not on the injury report, so that's big for them. He's missed the last three games for the Celtics. But I think that this series comes down to, can you do your best? And I know it's going to be a lot, and it's going to be very hard to do. Do your best to neutralize Jason Tatum. He absolutely torched the Knicks this year. 33 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists, and shot 54% from the field. The one player that had success against Tatum this year in the four matchups, OG Anunoby. He held Tatum to 5 of 20 shooting across those games. I'm expecting Tibbs to have him as the primary ball defender on him, with a mixture of Mikal Bridges too. Going to be a huge series for Mikal Bridges. I think he can't pull the disappearing act that he's been known to do. But I think that this is the time. If the Knicks are going to take advantage of a Celtics team that's going through some injury issues, this is the time. And they have the clutchest player in the NBA, in Jalen Brunson. He's going to get his. I think Karl Anthony Towns is going to be better in this series. And Mitchell Robinson is going to be more pivotal for this team than he has been before. If he can give them a solid 20 minutes off the bench, that can kind of help protect the paint a little bit and maybe force the Celtics into some high contested, more troubled shots, or at least contested shots on the perimeter. They love to shoot the three, but I think if you give somebody give some rim protection as well as on the offensive end, Mitchell Robinson's an outstanding offensive rebounder. Give them some second possessions. I think they could actually muck it up for the Boston Celtics a little bit here.
I think there's some wishful thinking in there for a competitive series, Dan. Honestly, I do. I think there's some wishful thinking right there because, look, man, I just watched Orlando compete like hell against Boston. I'm with you there. The Tibbs should be going with some two bigs with Mitchell Robinson. Muck it up next to Cat. Play with bigs. We just haven't seen it all year. Like he's had so many chances to play with two bigs and he hasn't done it. And maybe this is the series things change. Maybe he's been saving this in his back pocket all year long. I just don't see it. I don't see it, Dan. I mean, you're
the man is not known for adjustments. You're right. He's not known for making changes, especially this late in the game. I don't know why I have this faith, but I think that we're going to see, a pretty competitive series here. I think it sounds like you think this is going to be a quick series. It's going to be a wrap, like a quick sweep, or are we going gentlemen?
I'll give it five. Knicks get one, but I'll go with Celtics in five.
Okay.
Look, man, the number one thing I'm thinking about in this series is Boston on defense against New York, because they're going to put Tatum on Cat. They're going to put Porzingis on Hart. And the reason why they do that is because if you run a Cat-Brunson pick and roll, you can switch that, and then you get Tatum on Brunson. So Hart's going to have a big series. That's a lot to hope for him offensively. And I worry about how Brunson performs against Boston, because if you look during the season, he averaged 27 or so points per game, but only 5.5% of his shots came in the restricted area against Boston during their four regular season games. That's the least of all Eastern Conference opponents for Brunson this year. He averaged only 4.5 free throws in four games against Boston, also the least in four games against opponents in the Eastern Conference this year. So the least amount of free throws, least amount of shots on the rim, and that's because of the way Boston defends him. And so unless that can change and Brunson can live at the free throw line, he had 13 free throws in one of the four games, and that was a late season game where I felt like Boston wasn't quite as locked in defensively. If you can have more games like that, if you can get to the rim at a rate that he usually does, then I feel better about the Knicks' chances of going deep into this series. But I just think Boston has too many weapons defensively to make life hard on Brunson, hard on Cat, and then the other end of the floor, they're going to hunt those guys possession after possession after possession. And if Tatum's having an off night, well, they got Jaylen Brown. They got Derek White. They got freaking Peyton Pritchard. They got Kristaps Porzingis. They have so many mismatch hunters. I feel like this is going to be an eye-opening series for the Knicks, and they're going to enter the offseason saying, well, we made all these changes. We still got a long way to go, though. That's my prediction week and a half.
I'm having faith in the fact that this is why you acquired Mikal Bridges for all those picks. This is the moment. You have your chance. This is why you went to get two of the what should be the best wing defenders to try to hold down Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Now, you're right. Derek White is the X factor always, and Kristaps Porzingis is a problem. But I think that you're over. I can't say this because I have Boston going this far. I just think it's going to be more competitive than you're leading on it to be. The Knicks just got through a grueling session with the Pistons, and I think it was probably they overestimated how hard that Pistons matchup was going to be. And I think it could be the eye-opening moment for them that, we got to lock in. We got to get our stuff together. And this is where they knew that this was going to be the eventual matchup. So I think they were playing with their food a little bit against the Pistons. The Pistons certainly could have won that series, but every series is different. And for as much as you said in the beginning of this show that you kind of discount and don't take the regular season with as much significance as the playoffs, I think that would apply that here. I think we're going to see the Knicks play put a more concerted effort into trying things different to get different results, because clearly what they did in the regular season was not effective. So I'm giving more faith to the Knicks here. Not saying I'm going to pick them to win, but I think that they're not going to get gentlemen swept.
I hope you're right. I want competitive hoop series. I hope you're right, Dan. I hope you're right. Man, thank you for joining me tonight, Dan. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, KOC. Thanks, man.
Big thank you to Mike and Emmy for working late on this Sunday to produce today's episode. We're not going to have another show until Thursday night post game. Thursday night, because of some scheduling this week, I'm going to be traveling earlier in the week as well. So Thursday night will be our next podcast, but you can always read my stuff on Yahoo Sports as well. And we're going to have a great week. We got a lot of podcasts coming up. Next week is the NBA Draft Combine. We have some draft stuff that's going to be coming up as well. A big month ahead on this show. So subscribe. If you have not done so already, give us a thumbs up on YouTube. It really does help us out. We'll be back again on Thursday. Enjoy the playoffs, everybody.